You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly with Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden. Welcome on campus to the Purple Project Podcast. On the menu, this podcast is all about the latest developments in Kansas State athletics. From football to basketball and everything else in between the college town of the Little Apple, it's the Purple Project Podcast. And now your host, Eddie Greer III.
What's going on, K-State Nation? This is another edition of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition, episode 146 of Recording This Tonight. Final Thursday of February the 23rd, 2023. I am your host, Eddie Greer, host of the Purple Project Podcast, and home of the Big 12 Champions in Football 2022, the K-State Wildcats. So if you're new on board to this podcast, of course, welcome on board to this K-State Athletics Pod, all things K-State. Here on this podcast, we cover not only just football and men's basketball, but we cover women's basketball, golf, track and field, whole nine yards of this podcast. Episode 146 of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly begins right now. And, of course, I did episode 145 last week without my co-host Alex Aiden. He is back, still getting over a little bit of COVID, but he is back and going to try to hang in here for tonight's episode. Alex Aiden out there in San Diego, California, also a K-State alum like myself. Alex, how you doing tonight?
Doing better, Eddie. Doing better. Last week, yeah, there. I appreciate you holding the fort down. There is no way I would have been able to get through a podcast last week. But you mentioned it on one of your dailies that when I was on a couple weeks ago, I thought it was allergies. I was incorrect. It was not. It was not allergies. I learned that a few days later. It was indeed COVID. So I've been battling that a couple weeks, but I'm very close, Eddie. Very close testing negative. I tested positive today, but it was just by the slightest of amount. So I should be good to go this weekend. Just have a few symptoms now that are left. So apologies if I cough here or there, but on the mend, hopefully with that. So all is good there. I will say this, Eddie, though, right before COVID got me, or a couple days before COVID got me, I did go out to a mixer for the K-State Alumni Association out here in San Diego. I think I mentioned that the president of the Alumni Association was in San Diego, and so had a mixer there, and was able to still tell a couple people about the Purple Project Podcast. So, hey, you know, spreading the word.
There you go. Yep, there you go.
All over.
Yeah.
So, increase those listeners. But it was great to be able to mingle with some K-State people out here in San Diego and then see the president of the Alumni Association and talk to them kind of about K-State out here in the San Diego community. So that was great. I'll tell people there are K-Staters everywhere. There are K-Staters out here in San Diego. And if they're out here in San Diego, Eddie, they're everywhere. They're everywhere. So super cool to see that. And I'll get together with the group from time to time for a watch party, but it was good to see them there. So there's that, and I told you, pivoting quickly from that too, I told you this before we got on the pod. Obviously, not happy I got COVID, but it might have saved us from a rant. I was not too happy with the way K-State played at Texas Tech or at Oklahoma. But I couldn't come on the show and complain about it, so couldn't do that. And before I could get on the show, K-State just turned right back around and got two top 15 wins, or top 20 wins at home and looked way better. So I'm much more excited to talk about this K-State basketball that we saw the last week than the K-State basketball we saw 2 weeks ago. So I'm excited about that. And then you mentioned we'll talk about baseball, since baseball's up to a good start. And then the women's basketball, they just continue to make no sense with what they're doing. So, you know, winning, you know, beating Baylor and KU and losing to TCU. So, I mean, yeah, can't figure them out. Cannot figure them out, but excited to break it all down.
Yeah, let's just go ahead and start right there with women's basketball, Alex, right there. Last night, as we're sitting on the Gordon's podcast on Thursday night, K-State women's basketball did play last night, led by, of course, Serena Sundell and Gabby Gregory there, combining for a combined 44 points. A postcast just came out literally before, 2 hours before we recorded this podcast, so I'm not going to say too much like I did on that postcast. If you're interested in that, of course, a lot of people have been loving the postcast. You can go back and download it, K-State Nation, and check that out. But yeah, K-State, Alex, last time you were on the podcast, they did not play TCU well, but they lose to the worst team. Well, both teams have in common, the men's and women's basketball teams of K-State losing to the worst teams in the conference. They are handing, for the women's side, TCU a puzzling loss there, handing TCU a early Christmas gift there for their first win of the Big 12, but then come back and then beat KU last night to split the Dillon Sunflower Showdown 63-45 in that game last night, and holding KU to the lowest point total of the year. K-State overall, this women's team, it's been a calling card all year long. We just can't figure them out. Last night, they played better at home than they do away. It's just clear. We've been talking about that all year long when it comes to women's basketball here. K-State boosted their home record last night with one home game remaining. 13-3 at Bramlage. And on the away games, Alex, still have that goose egg. They're 0-7 on the road this year. So the roller coaster, Jeff Mini, of course, talked about this in his presser last night. He was not happy about the roller coaster that he's been through this year, but he said, keep saying they're improved. So, Alex, kind of your thoughts here as we approach basically now 3 games left of the regular season for the ladies. They hit the road to Morgantown, and then they got to turn around and play 2 ranked teams in the regular season.
Yeah, definitely. So, I first off, totally gross mention this is off. Chiefs Super Bowl champs, let's go. That saved me from COVID. That's what saved me from COVID, was the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl. Back to the K-State. I totally meant to bring that up at the beginning because I wasn't able to do it last spot. Getting back to the women's team, though, I believe Jeff Mitty when he says they're improving, because you see them they're at least having some flashes now, right? They were really struggling in the middle of the Big 12 schedule. They weren't getting any wins. We talked about how it was just so mental with the Mitty, that they just could not get it going. And lately, are they consistent? No. There's nothing that's been consistent about their play in the last 6 games. Six games when they kind of really started getting it going a little bit. But what they've done is they've got 3-3, and they have won 3 home games against 3 good teams. You know, they beat number 12 Iowa State at home by 1. They beat Baylor at home by 19, which Baylor's technically not ranked. So I take that back. Not all of them are ranked wins, but Baylor is a top half. That's a good Big 12 team. You beat them by 19, and then you beat KU by 18 at home. So you've got your good moments, right? And then you've also got your bad moments. I remember catching them when they played at Texas Tech. They did not look good in that game. Going on the road to TCU and losing by 13 to a team that is that bad. I mean, TCU is a bad – I'm sorry, Eddie, they're awful. They're just awful. They're one of the worst Power 5 bad women's basketball programs. And you went, you just played like crap in Fort Worth. So that made no sense at all. But, and then, you know, you lose by 17 to Oklahoma. There's really no shame in that, but you get clobbered there. But again, you bounce back and you beat KU by 18, and you beat Baylor by 19. And so they're having flashes, and they're putting good games together. They're just not able to consistently do it. So, long story short, I agree with Jeff Mitty that they are improving because they weren't winning any games in the middle of the season. The problem is they can't get any consistency going, and really the biggest reason they can't get any consistency going, Eddie, is because they can't win on the road. They're 0-7. You mentioned it. And so you're looking at their schedule, and their next 2 games are on the road. So You know, they go to West Virginia and they go to Oklahoma. You know, looking at kind of how the season's gone, you can't feel too great about either one of those games. And then you go home and play Texas, who beat you by 36 points, 46 points?
I think it was 36, 37 points. Yeah, something like that.
It was bad. It was bad. Look, it was 87 to 41. Yeah, that's not great. So not feeling great, Eddie, about these last three games, but it would be nice. It would be nice to see them get a game on the road. You don't want to finish with a goose egg on the road. You know, you want to find a way to get a win somewhere. So I don't think it's coming in Norman. So I think that West Virginia is your shot, and so we'll see if on Saturday in Morgantown they can get a win there. But the positive again is that they're playing better. West Virginia, K-State 16-12, West Virginia 16-10. So it's a team they can beat. And it's not, you're not playing Texas, you're not playing Iowa State, you're not playing someone like that. It's a winnable game, but can K-State actually go out, win it, and string a couple wins in a row? And that's the question, and that's what we haven't seen. We've seen them get wins here and there, but we just haven't seen them string anything together. So,
right, yeah.
We'll see if they can do it. I mean, they're really not, at this point, playing for an NCAA tourney bid. I don't know if there's other postseason opportunities for them out there. Potentially, but at this point, I think you just want to play good basketball through the end of the season, try to get some momentum going into the offseason when you get Aoka Lee back going into next year. So I kind of think that's where you're at with them.
Yeah, exactly what I said, but in a postcast, but did mention Aoka Lee in that postcast there. Yeah, so I'm not sure if they're going to even invite to the WNIT, if that's possible for them. They're going to have to somewhat get some kind of mini streak here to end the season if they're going to be even eligible for that. So we'll see what happens in Morgantown on Saturday with the ladies basketball team there. Again, of course, I saw the game against OU here, of course, in Bramlage when OU just dominated them inside. And, of course, the drubbing earlier, as you mentioned, Alex, against Texas the first time around on the road by 37. If I can pull that real quick here.
When you pull that up, Eddie, I'll just quickly say, though, with caveat to this, always great to beat KU. Any time you beat KU, it's a good day. So you beat KU by 18 on your home court, that matters, right? That instinct and that instant rivalry is a thing. So you may not be having your best year, but KU beat you in Lawrence. So to be able to get that win on your court, take your home court against your rival, like that's a thing. Like, you know, that was important, and it was nice to see them be able to get that.
And of course, we're off by a little bit, Alex. Texas beat us by 46 in
46. I was in the 40s. This is why I'm a communications major, Eddie, and not a math major, a stats major, anything like that.
So we'll see what happens there. Two to the last three for the ladies basketball team, sitting at 16-12 overall, 5-10 in the Big 12. They have two on the road, one at home, and both of these teams do have something in common. Talking about the K-State men's basketball team and the K-State women's basketball team here on the Purple Project Podcast. Edgar, Alex, and a couple of K-State alums. They both have good records at home with a good transition to the men's side. A recent win over Baylor. And yes, COVID probably saved you from that rant. I was very interested in seeing what you're going to say, but we're going to save that because we don't have much time to do that.
I'm sure a lot of people were curious what I was going to say. It was not the most optimistic take. I was pretty much going to complain about turnovers more than anything, Eddie, because holy smokes! But hey, they did better. They did better in that category this week.
Yes, they did, and two big critical wins that they had to have. Again, both postcasts of these games I did are out on the Purple Project Podcast feed. The win over Iowa State last weekend after trailing at halftime by 8. They come out like gamebusters and had to grind that game out. And then the recent win this week and taking the regular season sweep to Scott Drew, Drunk Tank's buddy, in the Baylor Bears. And how sweet that is now. Obviously, the seedings, Alex, for the NCAA tournament have been coming out of late. And there's been some that have us at the 3 seed. Some have us at the 2 seed. But K-State now, look, K-State now has 3 games left. Oklahoma is left on the home slate there, and you have to go this week here to, to Stillwater this weekend. That's going to be an early Saturday game, and then you end the road game, and then you have to end the conference play against West Virginia in Morgantown. So Baylor was your last ranked opponent for a while until, obviously, the Big 12 tournament there, and the projected. Also, I did a daily on the projected seedings, which has changed for the time being. That could change again when we get to the last week of the regular season. But again, just like the women, Alex, 3 games left for the men's team, and it was doom and gloom there with that bad stretch of games there. You're like, oh my, I don't know, we're gonna beat Iowa State and Baylor the way we're playing, and then home cooking Bramlage, 1 loss, Alex. With Oklahoma left, that should be a revenge game for sure. In case they can play like they're capable of, they should beat Oklahoma. Definitely was disappointing. Oh, definitely was disappointed in the effort at Norman in Texas Tech as well. They left a lot of opportunities left on the table there, but they made up for it at home. Now you turn the page to go for a tough game at Oklahoma State, but. Looking 3 games left, Alex, K-State, it's there. It's there for them now. I don't know how this is going to end for this team. Obviously, we'll talk about it when the regular season ends, obviously. But K-State now, they have to translate. Whatever they bought up at Bramlage, they have to transfer it on the road.
100%, 100%. And, it's been a bit of a roller coaster for the men's team. Here the last few weeks, they started out, gangbusters. 6-1 in the Big 12, the first 7 games, and you're like, man, this team may never lose. They did. Here they are at 9-6 in conference play. It's a testament to them what they've done. But backing up, we obviously they went a bunk, and I think the biggest thing to take away is. No team is going to go through the Big 12 and not go through a funk. I think every team has had that moment. And, look at Oklahoma State. They won 5 in a row, and then they immediately lost 3 in a row after winning 5 in a row. And look at KU. KU had a stretch where they lost, 3 in a row as well, or 3 of 4, something like that. And then Texas had their stretch where they lost to Tech. Back to back, coming off of a loss to KU, and so those moments have been Oklahoma just about beat Texas this last week in Austin, and so everybody has these tough spots, and K-State was going through one. I think what was the most frustrating thing, Eddie, was the way they were losing because you watched the Texas Tech game and. It wasn't anything Texas Tech was doing. I feel like Texas Tech played that well, to be 100% honest, in that game. KC had 23 turnovers. I mean, That's why they lost the game. They were just giving Texas Tech the basketball. It was just the sloppiest basketball that you could ever imagine. And it's like, if you even take care of the ball like halfway decent, you win that game. And it just feels like you handed that game to Texas Tech. And then you look at the Oklahoma game, it was different. That game was, it just seemed like K-State had no energy. And it's like, where is the energy? Like, you're coming off a loss on the road to Texas Tech, and then you followed up with, instead of with this insurgency, with that of energy. And, looking back on it, Eddie, playing in the Big 12 is a gauntlet, and you're going to be kind of zapped of some energy. I think we kind of saw with Baylor on Tuesday, to be honest. They had that emotional game against KU on Saturday where they went up big, and then KU went on a huge run in the second half, and it seemed like Baylor was a little flat Tuesday. So, I mean, I think that that's going to be part of it, part of Big 12 11, but man, it was just disappointing to see K-State come out with this urgency in a game after what they did against Tech, and, you know, Desi sitting up and saying, oh, what a bad loss, and then just, you know, not have that. So that was concerning, especially because I think Tech is better than Oklahoma as well. That's the other part of that. So I wasn't feeling good about it. I was not feeling good about where they were. They had won a lot in the last few weeks before the Iowa State Baylor wins, but they went into those games, Eddie, and they really rode the ship. And I felt a little bit better on Saturday when the NCAA, the NCAA committee, released their top 16, top four seeds. K-State was listed as a 3 seed after losing to Oklahoma and Texas Tech, and I was like, okay, so K-State really hasn't dropped, because all their losses were quad one losses, so they really haven't dropped in the seeding. So you're like, everything is still there for K-State. Like, game with the Big 12, that's off the table, but like, everything is still there from an NCAA tournament standpoint. And all K-State's done is just really strengthen that resume. But more importantly, get on the right tracks, because you need to get on the right tracks. And so they came out against Iowa State, a game that they absolutely needed to win. I didn't think they played their best basketball against Iowa State, but they played with good energy, and they were able to really play off the home crowd. I feel like that was a game where K-State didn't play their best basketball, but you saw the effects of playing at home, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it carried K-State through that game against Iowa State, and got them kind of an ugly win, a little bit of an ugly win against Iowa State. So I was super happy, super pumped that they beat Iowa State, but my takeaway was, I still don't feel like they're playing great. That Baylor game is going to be a barometer, because if they play the way they did against Iowa State, against Baylor, they're going to lose. So I was really curious to see how they would play against Baylor. Baylor was a completely different story, Eddie. They actually played better against Baylor. They played well. And it was the first time they played well in a long time. Florida? I mean, Florida legit feels like the last time I saw them play well. Like, play a good basketball game. So, they played a good basketball game. They had 7 turnovers. They shot from the field, 48% from the field. They were 4-21 from 3, so they were not good there. But they were 15-21 from 2, 71% there. Defensively, they held Baylor to 65 points with those guards that Baylor has. That is admirable. They held them to 40% from the field. They really made Baylor work on defense, and it was the first time K-State's defense looked that good in a long time. And so they cut down on the turnovers, and they played better defense, and that was enormous. Marquise Noel, even struggling, Eddie, even turned the ball over like crazy. He had no turnovers in that game against Baylor, and that was just enormous. Keontae Johnson had just looked so flat, and we saw Keontae Johnson emerge against Baylor. So we saw some of the things that we saw early in the season, and I tweeted this after the game, Eddie, but I thought that might have been K-State's best win of the season, in regards to kind of the time, the place, and the way they played. I also thought it may have been the most complete game that they played all year long, up there with the KU game. I heard a couple of people say they didn't think K-State played that great against KU. I think K-State did play pretty good against KU at home, but this game was right up there with that. Looking at the way K-State won this game, because think about it, Eddie, Baylor made 11 threes when K-State made 4, and K-State won by 10. And that was because K-State just whipped Baylor in every other aspect of the game. So it was good to see them not just rely on a home crowd, but actually play a good game and really get themselves on the right track. So that was huge. And you mentioned it, looking at the NCAA tournament, some are saying 2 seed, some are saying 3 seed, not sure what it is, but what I'm pretty comfortable in saying is that right now they're a top 3 seed. I think that's a pretty safe bet to stay right now. And looking at kind of the last 3 games, you're thinking if K-State gets 2 of those 3 games, they're probably going to be a top 3 seed. And that's a pretty comforting spot to know you're in. So, if you're K-State, you've got to beat Oklahoma at home, because that's not a quad one win. I mean, if they lose to Oklahoma at home, that would be a quad two loss, and they only have one on the year. So, you've got to beat Oklahoma at home next week. And then you gotta win one of those two on the road, at Oklahoma State and West Virginia. They're both going to be tough games. K-State struggled on the road, and that's a huge hurdle. I think this Oklahoma State game is another kind of barometer game for K-State, because you're looking at it and you're looking at them and saying, can you go on the road, can you win a basketball game? Because you have not done it in a month and a half, and you've got to go on the road and win a basketball game. And I'll say this, Eddie, as shiny and it's sunny and all that as this talk is right now, I'm not going to forget the fact that K-State cannot win outside of Ramblers right now. They need to go leave Ramblers Coliseum, leave the Octagon of Doom, and win a basketball game. And if they can't do that, if they can't win a road game, one of these last road games, if they can't go win a game in Kansas City, I'm still going to remain pretty skeptical going into the NCAA tournament, because they've not shown us that they can win outside of Manhattan. So I need to see it to believe it. I'm really happy with the way they played these last two games. I'm super pumped that they got two top 20 wins. I love where they're sitting, kind of looking in the bracketology right now. But with that said, things still could fall apart. They still could slide if they lose both those road games, and you know, maybe they slide to the 4 line or the 5 line. And I still am not going to be optimistic about them if they can't win outside of Manhattan. So this is a huge game Saturday against Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State's desperate, Eddie. They won 5 in a row. They've lost 3 in a row, and they've worked themselves onto the bubble. So they need a win, and they're going to want to beat K-State. And they're a team that prides themselves on defense, and they've been giving up a lot of points lately. So I think they're going to come out, and they're going to play hard on defense. And K-State's going to have to really work for that. But you know what? If K-State can come out, they can play the way they did against Baylor, they should find a way to win that game. It's going to be tough. Mike Boynton's a good coach. And Gallagher, Iva is a tough place to play, but you know what? I think that K-State can do it, but I will feel as good about an Oklahoma State win on the road as I did about the Baylor win at home on Tuesday if they can get it, especially with Oklahoma at home coming next week.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Episode 146 of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly. Eddie Grid, Alexine here with you guys once again after Alex had a week off last week. Yeah, so again, we're sitting here on another episode of this podcast talking about K-State can't win on the road. And yeah, they showed us they can't win. So 3-6 right now, K-State men's 3-6, while at least the men's team had 3 wins. The ladies have no wins on the road. But yeah, that's the key. Can you at least split one of these two games on the road? And yes, again, covered it already. Oh, you have to beat them. 3-12, dead ass last in the conference.
100%.
You have to beat them. That's no excuses there. At this point of the season,
that would be a bad loss. That would be a B, like capital B, capital A, capital T. That would be a bad loss. That would be a sore eye on the resume, Eddie. Like legit, that would be a sore eye. A quad two loss at home.
Yeah, and OU has shown already under Porter Moser they can beat us either at Norman or in our own building. So last year, during the last Bill Bruce Weber last year here at K-State. So K-State's
got Moser's undefeated against K-State. He beat K-State in the Elite Eight with Loyola Chicago, and I think he beat K-State every time with Oklahoma.
So K-State's got to put that to bed, hopefully. Next week, the final week of the regular season. Of course, you got to go to West Virginia and Morgantown there. Yeah, West Virginia's having an uncharacteristic season themselves, 5-10, ninth in the conference there. And then, of course, the game that we're going to focus on now, Oklahoma State. They're going to be ready to try to win. And we already should know this by now. Every game is not a cakewalk in this conference. K-State has to be ready to play this game. K-State, 2 back. Kansas and Texas for the top spot right now. KU and Texas are on a course to possibly share, so KU's gonna need a lot of help between now and the end of the regular season there. But K-State, yeah, I like where they are. Even though I have not really checked out much of the bracketology yet, I haven't been too worried about other things. And but K-State, 3/3, yeah, I agree, top 3 seed for them. We'll see if they can finish regular season strong and then see where they seed right now in the Big 12 tournament. Right now they would be the 3 seed and play in Day 2. Yeah, you want to stay out of that first day bracket because you have Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, West Virginia, and OU as it stands right now, and TCU is flirting with Oklahoma State 7-8. Both of them, TCU and Oklahoma State, sitting at 7-8. So, yeah, you don't want to be sitting in that first day tournament. So it kind of feels good, barring any disaster from K-State basketball, sitting in a good position with your heading in to the weekend down there in Stillwater. This is the Pro Project Podcast, weekly edition, episode 146. Quick look at the rest of the athletic schedule for the weekend, of course, before we transition to K-State baseball. Track and field will be at it this weekend down in Lubbock, Texas. It just feels like they've just been down there weeks ago. They're going right back down there as I speak right now for the Big 12 Championships. Yep, 2-day event beginning tomorrow. K-State Nation there. They got a couple guys and gals that will be in contention. So that's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out on a 2-day event beginning, which begins tomorrow as we sit here halfway through this podcast. Friday and Saturday for the men's and women's track and fields teams there. And then, of course, tomorrow as well, you have tennis in action. Taking on SMU on the road in tennis. They look better, but their record is bad, as mentioned in these postcasts. But tennis, they got to get something going in the right direction before Big 12 play starts there. Baseball, which we'll get into here. Obviously, we know about the basketball games, and it's a good transition to K-State baseball, Alex. They were undefeated until last night. Could not rally back against a Lamar team that was also unbeaten coming in to the match last night. So they finished the Texas road trip 4-1. I know it's early, Alex, but now, like I've been saying all week long on this podcast, we find out for real how this baseball team is going to shake out, because you have the number one team in the nation coming, which is LSU, tomorrow, as we're sitting before this podcast. And then you have, Stevenson State and then on Saturday, and then Iowa at 12 Central Time. And going back up to Saturday's match against St. Houston, Alex, that's going to be a little bit before first pitch, a little bit after 4 Central Time there. And I am going to, since I missed on the recap of this game here against Lamar. Lamar now is 5-0. K-State had her chances in this game. Fell behind early, 2-0, and it was 4-1 after 3, and then K-State chipped away at it, but couldn't come close enough in this matchup as Lamar wins, hence K-State their first loss of the 2023 season, 4-3 in the game. Jeremy Rivera got the win for Lamar. Herman Virgado got the loss, his first loss of the season for the Cats there, and then, of course, Daniel Cole for Lamar had the save in this game. Kalen Culpepper went 1-for-4 in the game. Brady Day went 1-for-3 in this ball game. Brandon Jones also, like Day, went 1-for-3 in this ball game. Drove in a run. And then Rafael Patellar had a big night himself. 3-for-4 in the game. Scored two runs. Drove in 2 runs, scored in the game there. And I'm going to read a quote here from manager Pete Hughes, who recently got win 100 for K-State in his K-State coaching career. Well, tonight was disappointing. It was a disappointing game, but credit goes to Lamar. And here he carries on. Well, they were more disciplined tonight. They kept the ball out of the air, executed their bunts, and made all the big plays and pitches. When you win in those areas, you usually end up on the right side of one-run games. End quote. There as well. So after a 4-0 start, Alex, they lose to Lamar, and now get into a tough slate of games this weekend.
Yeah, and it's tough slate indeed, Eddie. I mean, it's were previewing the schedule, and I said, "Hey, man, if you can get out of the first 8-4-4, you feel pretty decent, and then you can kind of just chew away and get going from there." Well, they knocked the first four out real quick because they won the first four. So that is good. My fear is that they'll lose the next four and end up 4-4. So
you're on track.
that is my fear now. I was hoping when they got that win that they might be able to steal against Lamar, but you mentioned Lamar's off to a really good start. In case they got down early, they chipped away, but they couldn't quite get it. That one kind of stings. I mean, you kind of wish you could have stole that game before coming into this 5-0, but hey, not going to complain, Eddie. The fact that they went on the road, Stephen F. Austin, got four wins, four-game sweep. Anytime you get a four-game sweep, it doesn't even matter who's against Eddie. That's a four-game sweep on the road. You'll take that all day long. I mean, that's great. That's great work. So, credit to them for what they did, going on the road, winning, and not just winning, but winning the way they did, really dominating in some of those games against St. Houston State, was a really impressive job. It was a really impressive job by them. And, Lamar, you lose that one. It's a tough one. But it's a one-run game. And so you at least you had your moments in that game. And so here you are. You enter what's probably the most difficult little stretch in the non-con, in my opinion. Playing an undefeated LSU team, you're going to be playing an undefeated Iowa team.
Yep.
You are going to be playing a Sam Houston State team that's 3-2. but that's still not going to be,
that's not going to be an easy game. That's an easy.
It's still not going to be an easy game. So, we'll see what happens. Obviously, not incredibly optimistic about what they're going to do against LSU, to be quite frank. But I think Sam Houston State's a winnable game. I think that there's an opportunity for them. To go beat them, and I understand Iowa State doesn't even have baseball team. I understand Iowa is undefeated, I think that there's still potentially an opportunity for K-State there as well. So we'll see what happens, Eddie. If they can go in there and get get one, be 5-3 coming out of that again, I'll stick to my guns and say that I would take it. But again, I do want to just go back and give them a little more credit for what they did against Stephen F. Austin. First up, to win the first game, close game, one-run win, 7-6. They really got better every day they played, Eddie. They got a close one-run win in the first game. They were able to get a four-run win in game two, a six-run win in game three, and then 11-run win in game four. So it got better. It got better as the weekend went, Eddie. There were still some things that you would like to see cleaned up a little bit. There were still, a few errors. And we've talked about it that, hey, we'd like to see K-State clean that up a little bit and not give other teams as many opportunities as they kept doing the math here. It looks like K-State had on the weekend, they had six errors in four games. That's too many. That's still too many, Eddie. They did not have one game without an error against Stephen F. Austin. They still need to clean that up. They did have a game with no errors against Lamar, so I'll give them credit there. They did better there, but want to see that continue. And you've got to play clean baseball against these teams that are going to be playing here this weekend, or else you're not going to win. So you got to play clean baseball. And they got wins against Stephen F. Austin, and they outslugged them in a lot of games, but Stephen F. Austin did have some good games. Scored six runs, eight runs, five runs, four runs. I mean, they scored some runs on K-State, and while the offense is clicking, it's kind of like what Jerome Tang was talking about on the road for the men's team. Somebody was asking about Baylor and Texas that first week, and he said, we outscored, and that's not sustainable. That's not sustainable. I would kind of say the same thing here. Yeah, K-State scored 14 runs, 16 runs. That's not sustainable. I'm going to score 14 runs, 16 runs every night. So you need to be able to, you need to be able to play clean baseball, so you're not letting a team score 8 runs because you've got a couple errors, right, where you give them some extra opportunities. You've got to clean that thing up. So there's still some things they can do, and with the pitching, there's obviously, you know, pitching was not lights out at any point so far in the season, but that's something you'd like to see them clean up. But I still think there's opportunity for them to grow in that pitching rotation. And there's a lot of optimism around this offense, Eddie. I understand they only mustered up 3 against Lamar, but, you know, they definitely have got a lineup. I think their offense is going to be the strength of their team. I think you and I probably are both in agreement with that. And they're going to have the ability to really slug at times and be able to really score some runs. And so, again, will we see that this weekend or not? I don't know. But really happy with the way they played against even Boston. And we'll see what they do that weekend in the Round Rock Classic. And then once they get out of that, Eddie, they do have to go on the road against Omaha, which is going to be a tough game. But then they come home, and they are going to get games against Army and Stonehill and Youngstown State. So that's what? It's going to be 8 games, I think, at home. So, or 7 games. It's going to be 7 games at home. So they're going to have a chance to rack up some wins there. There's no reason they shouldn't go, you know, anywhere from 5-2 to 7-0 in that stretch. So if they can come out of here 5-3, and including in there Omaha 6-3, maybe, or 5-4, then you come home and you've got a chance to really kind of pad that schedule. So we'll see what happens. But I'm eager to see them, Eddie. I'm eager to see them against some higher competition.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Yeah, to remind for K-State Nation, after the game against Omaha next week, it will be next Friday, actually, a night. Next Friday. Yes, next Friday it will be the home opener for K-State Baseball. Eddie Gritt, Alex Dean, the Pearl Project Podcast, weekly continuous episode 146, here tonight on this final Thursday of February. Army comes to town next Friday for the first home game for K-State Baseball. And yes, Alex, you're right. The offense is going to be key for this baseball team. And doing the math here, against Stephen F. Austin, which was not a good baseball team, 45 runs scored in that four game series, and then you add 3 in the loss last night. That's 48 runs scored. If my quick math's correct right there, 48 runs in the first 5 games. That is going to be challenged for sure against this stiff competition. But I'm excited to see what they're going to do this weekend in the Carback Round Rock Classic in Round Rock, Texas. That's a lot of R's there for you here on this episode of the podcast. But yeah, LSU tomorrow afternoon, that's a 2 p.m. first pitch there. And then, of course, we already talked about, mentioned Sam Houston. That's one of the, if not the winnable game on this list. But hey, crazier things happen in baseball, so stay tuned, folks. Stay tuned. And then, of course, Iowa to round things out. And then, of course, Omaha. Yeah, we know Omaha, Alex, for sure.
Yeah, we do.
And then Army in a weird kind of a one-on, one-off kind of deal. So you have Army, Stonehill, and then you have Army again, and you have Stonehill again. So it's like back, we're going to play this team, no, we're going to play that team, no, we're going to play this team, no, we're going to play that team.
I've never seen that in a baseball schedule, Eddie. I'm going to be honest. Maybe I just haven't made it close enough attention, but I've never seen that.
I don't think I have either. As much as I watched baseball throughout my life, I don't think I've never seen that. So that's 3. So, again, to clear it up, for those of you new to the podcast, of course, Army is March 3rd, then Stone. All these games are in Twin Family Stadium, so that also puzzles me. I don't know why we just...
And they're all back-to-back days. It's literally what? Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Uh-huh, yep. Yes, sir. Yep, you're right. You're spot on. So, yeah, Army,
so weird.
Friday, next Saturday, yeah, Stonehill, and then Sunday, you have Army again. And then I never heard of Stonehill before either. So
I just looked them up. I was not sure they were the Skyhawks, Eddie. They're from Massachusetts, so I've never heard of them. I said it on the podcast a couple weeks ago, but I've never heard of you. K-State should win every game against you. No offense, but if I don't know who you are, we can't lose to Betty. We can't lose to him.
Yeah, we talked about that on one of those episodes. We broke down a little bit. We went over, actually it was two episodes, because you went ahead and kind of went over the first half of it, then we went over the rest of it. So if you are interested in finding that episode, go back, check out our recent episodes of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly. But that's coming up for PQ's manager for K-State, as they should be in Round Rock, Texas by now, as we are here closing towards the end of this episode of the podcast. But yeah, number one ranked LSU is first on tap for K-State baseball, and I'll be on the road, so I'll definitely go back and recap this ball game, of course, in addition to Sam Houston State. So definitely be lookout for the postcast of these matchups here over the weekend. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition, episode 146. I do want to rewind back to football here as we begin to kind of wind down this podcast. Alex, so you were obviously here last week, and of course we talked about Colin Klein. He is coming back. He officially coming back. That's huge news. They're for K-State there, and obviously a sigh of relief more than anything else. But we talked about that in episode 144 of the PPPW edition there about this. Prior to that announcement, that came out of left field for me. I was kind of just brushing it off, and then I saw more rumors about it. I was like, okay, this might get a little serious. But luckily, Colin Klein needed some time to kind of process the whole situation and whatnot, and made a decision there as well. And of course,
boy, it sounded like he was about to go too, Eddie. I mean, it sounded like it was all trending towards him leaving. Like it was not just a rumor. He flew out there. He had multiple conversations with Marcus Freeman and what Derek Young and Tim Fitzgerald both, but you know, Fitz, they both said, yeah, we were under the impression that this was trending towards him taking that job. And he ended up, you know, having a change of heart when he talked to people within the football facility and players, and then realizing how much K-State meant to him. And honestly, Eddie, I think that it took K-State, again, based on what I've heard, kind of took K-State by surprise when they heard it, like, oh, that kind of came out of left field, and then they kind of ratcheted it up on, like, you know, kind of their efforts to make sure that he knew how much they wanted him. But I think Colin Klein, you think about it, he's a legacy, right? He's a legacy. We know what he did at K-State, and he's married to a legacy as well. And so, I mean, that's a K-State family through and through. So, I don't know, John Kurtz on the 3 Mile podcast threw out to Derek, you know, because Alabama apparently expressed was dabbling around the waters of Colin Klein as well, and they were looking for an OC. And he said, is this conversation different if it's Alabama that offers and not Notre Dame? Because Notre Dame offered, Colin Klein turned it down. And Derek said that no. He said, I think that it would have ended up being the same. Because, you know, I think K-State just means that much to Colin Klein. And then they kind of got into a conversation, Eddie, about Colin Klein kind of being the heir apparent to Chris Kleiman and being the overwhelming favorite for the job after whatever Chris Kleiman decides to leave or hang it up or retire or whatever it might be. And it was just a very interesting conversation. So I encourage you to check that episode out from a week or two ago. But It unpacked a lot of it, and you know, obviously we talked about the raise, and K-State needed to give him a raise, and it sounds like they did / are going to. But I mean, that was more really the point of that was more than just a rumor, right? And I think it hit everybody out of left field, and it looked like he was going to go, and you had to wonder if he was going to leave. What does that mean for Avery Johnson? You know, what does that mean for Trey Spivey? What does that mean for Andre Davis? What does it mean for some of these players that came to play for Colin Klein? And that's a real thing. I mean, that was really a real fear of mine, and really happy to see him back. So Glad you were able to talk about it in the pod yesterday, but curious your thoughts on it too, Eddie.
Yeah, I kind of already said, I believe I talked about that on the last episode, the solo episode there as well. Pretty much going to stick with what I said there. I think this is big to get Colin Klein back for K-State there. Yeah, like K-State, it threw me off of aloof, like I've just been saying, but yeah, I also listened to that episode this week as well on the 3-Mile Pod there. John Kurtz, Derek Young were talking about that. Of course, Cole Maybeck's on that as well. Yeah, he talked about the Alabama thing as well. So it was nerve wracking listening to that there and thinking like, oh man, could he be leaving? And so, but yeah, they talked about Colin Klein probably wanted to go through the process of what is it like to get interviewed by another college? In my opinion, anyway. So yeah, the Klein's, we've seen Colin Klein grow into a K-State icon, and of course Colin Klein has a family here as well. I echo the same sentiments as John as well. So that's huge news there, and maybe he talked, like he said, maybe Colin Klein wanted different opinions from his closer, obviously his family for one, first off, and then Colin Klein might have gotten maybe a second, third, fourth opinions from closer friends that he's been with since being a K-State, really, for as long as he has been. So huge for the staff, and that's very intriguing there. We'll have to see if that comes to fruition there. Obviously, Chris Klieman, we've seen what he's done since coming here, and the excitement around this football program. You just got a top 30 class, recruiting class, and now you're trying to build on what you did last year, trying to be a factor again in the Big 12 discussion. You're defending, coming up this upcoming fall, you're going to be the defending Big 12 champions. So everybody's going to be pumped up for that. So can you follow it up with another successful season there as well? It might not end up being another championship, but again, you want to be in the conversation week in, year in, year out. That is the goal there. So Chris Klieman, obviously, that's going to be interesting to see where he's going to take this program for the next handful of years. And we're Colin Klein. If he does it again, if this offense, and there was a post on Instagram that I looked at today, actually, of the offense coming back, obviously. Yeah, Will Howard coming back. The additions of Keegan Johnson and Treshawn Ward. Obviously, at Phillip Brooks, you have a backfield that's going to be loaded, led by DJ Giddens and company there. And then the whole offensive line is coming back. And then the tight ends, we can't forget about them. Ben Sinnott, the emergence of him. If you have another great season offensively, production-wise, then the conversation really kicks up a high gear a little bit of, you know, yeah, people of other colleges, right, trying to get your guy, right? So that's kind of what I'm kind of thinking is, and there's nothing wrong with that. Hey, I don't want to take a step back because we have all this talent. Because, hey, we're trying to compete for conference championship. Because that last year, what we saw there, once Will Howard took over, and yes, none of it, let's not forget about what Adrian Martinez, again, was rehashing again, did for this program, without question. But when Will Howard stepped in there, it was pretty much game over. From there, Will Howard turned over a new leaf, and all of a sudden he's taken off. So if this offense takes another step forward, which I believe it can, I think a lot of colleges outside the Big 12 are going to be looking at Colin Klein and say, hey, I want that type of offense. And there's going to be more looks, not just about Notre Dame.
100%. I think you nailed it, Eddie. This is going to become a thing. If K-State has another good offensive season, which I expect they will, there's no indication, Eddie, that they wouldn't. Colin Klein's going to have a year under his belt. That's his first year as OC. he's going to have a year under his belt. He's going to be more comfortable in that seat with that play sheet. And he's going to have Will Howard, who we know he has full trust in. He's going to have a good group of receivers. He's going to have a good group of running backs. He has his whole offensive line back. So there's no indication. Yes, you don't have Deuce Vaughn, and yes, you don't have Malik Knowles, but there's no indication that this offense is going to slow down. You've got arguably the best transfer running back, arguably the best running back in the portal on your team to replace Deuce with. You've got arguably one of the best receivers in the portal to replace Malik Knowles with, and then you got everything coming back. And then Phillip Brooks decides to come back, so you get him back as well. I mean, there's no indication that this offense is going to slow down. Maybe they do. Maybe I'm wrong. But there's no indication that this is going to be a bad offense. I think it's going to be a pretty good offense. Mm-hmm. And Colin Klein is just getting more comfortable calling the plays. And we already know the trust that he has in Will Howard. And we also know that Avery Johnson, assuming they redshirt him, will have 4 games of eligibility. And they might have the ability to use him in certain packages in 4 games. And so Colin Klein's going to have the opportunity to have a good season. And the more exposure that he gets, the more exposure that K-State gets, the more opportunities he's going to get from other schools. And clearly this past season, there was a lot of dabbling this past offseason, because we know Texas A&M dabbled around now. We know Alabama dabbled around now. And we know that Notre Dame offered him an offensive coordinator job. That's 3 big programs, Eddie, that are kind of poking around in your space, trying to figure out there. And that's after 1 year. Again, this is his first year ever being an OC. So he duplicates it without Deuce Vaughn, you better believe there's going to be interest from other schools, and not just for offensive coordinator positions, Eddie, but for head coaching positions. I think that's going to be a thing too. Now that may not be a Power 5 school starting off that would offer him that, but I think that that's a possibility. And so this isn't going to go away, but I kind of had the mindset, Eddie, that if he didn't take the Notre Dame offensive coordinator job, I don't think he would leave K-State for another OC job.
Right, I don't think so either.
I think it would be a head coach job. I could be wrong. 100%. Who knows if Alabama calls him, go coach Nick Saban. Maybe that is enough to lure him out. But again, if Notre Dame doesn't do it, if $2 million to be an OC doesn't do it when you make over double what you're making at K-State, I don't know what does do it. So I think that, there will be some smoke, but I don't know if that would lure him. A head coaching job, it's hard to think it wouldn't lure him away. But maybe it wouldn't. I don't know. But that's going to be a thing. But for me, I just kind of get back to the fact that, hey, if you've got people coming after your coaches, that means you're winning. And that means you're building a program and a culture. And it is easier to replace coaches in a winning culture and a winning program than try to put coaches in a culture that's not winning. And that's just the reality of K-State. If you're winning and you build a winning culture, there's going to be people coming after your coaches, because K-State is not, they're not a Bama. They're not a Big Ten school. They're not an SEC school. And it's just the reality of the situation. And so there's going to be people coming after your coaches. And, again, that's only going to happen if you're winning. So it's a good problem to have. And it's something that's just a reality. And we're going to have to deal with. And we know we're going to have to deal with. And that's why K-State's always going to have to work a little harder than some other schools to try to sustain success. But, I think Colin Klein has some Bill Snyder in him. And, you never know. You never know. He may stay there. But there's going to be more bites of the apple, no doubt.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly with Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden.
And, of course, the final piece of the puzzle here before we wrap things up on this another jam-packed edition of this Purple Project Podcast Weekly, episode 146 of this podcast. Matthew Middleton was hired recently last week as the new wide receivers head coach there. The Kansas City, Kansas native coming back to the state of Kansas to be the next wide receivers head coach. Wide receivers coach. It is getting late, folks. So Matthew Middleton is back in the state of Kansas there. Recently,
He just finished up a season, and I did a daily on this. Now I lost where I was at. Yeah, he was at Kent State recently. So before taking a job here at the wide receivers position, coaching position at K-State. Quickly, Alex, what are your thoughts on Matthew Milton as he settles in to finish up his first full week at the office?
Yeah, I love the hire, Eddie. I do. I know that K-State had some interest in him when they ended up going with Van and Thad Young and Thad Ward. And once Thad Ward left, you kind of dip back into that well and see if he's still interested. And he is. And K-State went that route. He's got a really good resume. He's done a lot of really good things. Maybe not a ton at the Power 5 level, but he's had a lot of success and done a lot of good things in offense in his coaching career. And you mentioned it, Kansas City native, someone who knows K-State way, and is something, a job that he clearly was interested in. And I think there's also kind of a good thing because you lost that report because of the being away from home thing. Well, that's not going to be much of an issue here. You got a coach that kind of is in his backyard a little bit. So, All in all, you want to hire the best person for the job, and I think it helps that the best person for the job was a Kansas City native. So I never thought K-State would go dabble in the survey. I heard people talking about, would they look at in Weber? Would they look at Jake Waters? Would they look at some of those places? I never thought they really would do that. I thought it would be a name that we hadn't heard, and that's what it ended up being. But I think it's a really good hire. So again, it was tough to lose that Ward. He was great. He was a big part of K-State on the recruiting trail, getting some of the receivers that they did, and really turning around Malik Knowles and turning around Kate Warner. That receiving, you just got more from that receiving corps this past year than you had years prior under that Ward. So. It's scary losing him, but again, it kind of gets back to what we said. When you're winning, people are going to get eyeballs on you, and you're going to lose coaches, and that's what happened with that award. We didn't have the opportunity to go back home to Illinois, and, you got to find a replacement. So I think that this is really the best-case scenario given that, and excited to see what he can do with these players, see if he can relate to them and get them excited about K-State. And, again, it doesn't appear that it's impacting any of the recruits that have already signed and are on campus, so that's a good thing. And I think that he'll seamlessly fit into Colin Klein's system. I think that's the other thing. I think what he does is pretty in line with what Colin Klein's trying to do at K-State. And that really positions that K-State offense well going into the year. I think it should be a seamless transition. For them, I don't know if it's seamless, but as close to seamless transition as possible for that wide receiver room. With a new coach on staff. So, good hire. Chris Kleiman had his eye on him. He clearly liked him again before this search that happened recently. And I'm excited to see what he brings to the wide receiver room.
We have made it to the red zone portion of the Purple Project podcast. I knew I was going to do it. I knew I was going to do that. The Purple Project podcast weekly, where you made it to the red zone here now. Of this portion episode of the podcast here, and in the midst of all that, I mentioned all the folks on the offensive side for K-State football that are going to come back or are going to be impact. One name that was not mentioned in there, and Derek Young, I saw this yesterday. Derek Young tweeted it, or it was maybe a day yesterday or a day before that, but I did see it. In the middle of all that, Derek Young, give him credit for that. Jackson Ean was not, Alex was not on the K-State roster for the spring.
I did not notice that, Eddie. But, I don't think that's a huge loss.
I don't think it's going to be a huge loss.
I don't mean that in a bad way. We all know Jackson Ean. I did not know that. So that is indeed news to me. But I like K-State depth. When you look at their fullbacks, you look at their tight ends, and you look at kind of their halfbacks, all their options there. I think they're in a pretty good spot. So you know, losing Jackson, that does hurt. But I think that there's, you've got enough depth at those positions that you can kind of, that are kind of interchangeable, that you can make it work. But interesting. And you know what? It'll be interesting, Eddie, to see if there's any other departures. Because, you know, we're getting close to spring ball now. And
yep.
we haven't heard much about K-State players transferring out. I mean, there's been like a couple of K-State players since the season ended that announced they're going to transfer out, but I mean, nothing much. And I mean, that K-State roster has not really turned over much at all. You wonder if you're going to get, because in the past couple of years, Eddie, K-State has gotten a couple transfers after spring ball. They've kind of, you know, they have spring ball and they kind of see how things go and what they may need, and then they may go attack a couple other players, but I think they're up against that 90-man limit with the roster, or the 85-man, or whatever the number is. But I think they're up against that number. So it's going to be interesting if a couple players end up leaving after spring ball, and then K-State is going after a couple transfers. That's something to watch, too, because you just haven't seen a lot of that turnover in that roster. But
yeah.
It's shame to see that he's gone, but wouldn't surprise me if there were a couple more down the line, too.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Yeah, there hasn't been much turnover. Yeah, you're right. There hasn't been much. Yeah, at least maybe four players have left the program since we won the Big 12 championship. So, yeah, there hasn't been much. There's been a lot of key additions at some key spots that we talked about that need to be filled for depth purposes there. But, yeah, it hasn't been much. And so it'll be interesting to see after spring ball. Yeah, that's coming up right around. That's going to be coming up here.
And it speaks to volumes, by the way, about the culture that has been built at K-State.
Yep.
That the fact that this day and age where you see so many players transferring in and out, K-State isn't really having that happen. And that's because they built a culture that players believe in.
Yep. That's a big thanks to the coach, Chris Klieman, and the rest of that coaching staff and the football staff there for really turning that culture around. I know we talked about that was a huge topic in the COVID season when we launched this podcast. So, I'm glad it's a stable, a good condition. Yeah, good, very good condition. All right, so, and also I wanted to talk about also spring training back for Major League Baseball. Games begin this weekend. Excited about that. And Alex, I want to get your thoughts real quick on the Chiefs front. Eric Bieniemy, now with the Commanders. Speaking of OC, we talked about with Colin Pond coming back. Eric Bieniemy gets wrestled away from the Chiefs, and he's going to be the Commanders' offensive coordinator. What do you think about that?
You know, I thought it was coming. To be honest, Eddie, I figured coming into this year, I thought it was probably going to be Bieniemy's last year as the Chiefs OC. I thought that either he would get a head coaching job or he would leave and go somewhere else as an OC and see if he could have success there and then potentially get a head coaching job. So I thought that there was rumbling that he may leave last year, and he didn't. He ended up signing a one-year deal with the Chiefs and coming back. But I was just under the impression all year that this is probably going to be his last year with the Chiefs, regardless of whether he got a head coaching job or not. And that's what happened. You know, he got the Washington Commanders job, and I'll say this, Eddie, I think it's ridiculous that he hasn't gotten a head coaching job.
And
seen what he's done for 5 years in Kansas City. Looking at Andy Reid, I've heard people say, well, you know, he's got to go here to prove it, do this and that. No offensive coordinator under Andy Reid has had to do this. Since Andy Reid's come to Kansas City, he's had three offensive coordinators. Doug Peterson, Matt Nagy, and Eric Bieniemy. So, Doug Peterson was OC for, three or four years. And then he got the Philly job and won a Super Bowl. Philly let him go, and now he's in Jacksonville. And then Matt Nagy, I believe he was the only offensive coordinator for 1 year. I think it was only 1 year. I mean, the Bears ended up hiring him. He went to playoffs a couple times, got fired. He's back with the Chiefs, the quarterback's coach. And then Abiodun. Abiodun's been OC for 5 years. So those two coaches did not have to go through any hurdles. They got rattled away within a couple of years, both times for head coaching jobs. And Bieniemy, who came in as the OC the same year that the Chiefs started Patrick Mahomes, he's had the most success of any of them on offense. So you can't sell me with the whole, well, you know, it's Andy Reid's offense, you know, you got to prove it on your own. No OC has had to prove it on their own that has been under Andy Reid. They've all gotten head coaching gigs. And that's an excuse, and I'm not buying that for a second. It's ridiculous. And that's what I'll say about it. Not going to coaching job. With that said, I totally understand him going to Washington. And he gets to, you know, it is a promotion. A little bit. For him. Because he's going to be the associate head coach, which he did not have the ability to be in Kansas City. Dave Tope has that role in Kansas City, and that's not going to change. So he's going to get that opportunity to really carry more weight within the coaching staff and within the roster. He's going to have complete control of the offense. He's not going to have another coach calling plays, another coach in helping design plays, design schemes, and all that different thing. All those different things, he's going to have complete control. So that's going to be more. I believe he has more money. There's more financial compensation for him in this role. So, you know, he has that going too. So there are benefits to this role for Eric Bieniemy, and he's getting things in this job that he did not get with Kansas City. And so, again, I'm happy that he is getting those opportunities. With that said, I think it's pretty ridiculous he has to do it. I don't think that he should have to do this, because he's doing this to try to get a head coaching job. You know, he's going to say the right things, but he's doing this to try to position himself to get a head coaching job. And I just think it's kind of ridiculous that he has to. But I don't blame him. I'd do the same thing if I were him. In Kansas City, I think the Chiefs wanted him to get a job, and they wanted him, you know, to do that and to have the problem with having to replace him as OC. I think that's what they wanted. The Chiefs like to hire, kind of reward their other coaches with promotions internally, and they haven't had the ability to do that because their Bieniemy hasn't been getting hired. And so they've lost a couple coaches that I think they did want to lose. Matt Kafka, who is now the OC of the Giants, is the one I think of first, who was the quarterback coach, who I think that they wanted to ultimately be their next OC. But, it is what it is. So I'm happy for Eric Bieniemy that he gets that opportunity. I wish he could have gotten a better opportunity, but I'm hoping that Washington gives him the players to actually succeed. That's the other thing. Sam Howell, with all due respect to Sam Howell, I hope he has another quarterback on the roster than Sam Howell when they go into the season, Eddie, because I don't know how much you can do with that. I don't want Bieniemy to be put in a bad situation, and that's my fear there, but we'll see what happens there. And then in Chiefs world, Eddie, I think that Matt Nagy, I think he's going to get promoted back to OC again. I think he's going to get that, and he'll become their OC again for the second time. And then go from there. And look, I'll be 100% honest. I think that Nagy might be the head coach waiting in Kansas City to replace Andy Reid. It would not surprise me. That kind of, he gets along with Mahomes really well. He gets along with the players really well. He knows the Chiefs. He knows their system. He knows the staff. Their GM loves him. So. I think that may be the way, what they want to do. Who knows if they will or not. But it will be interesting to see if Matt Nagy has a good year, Eddie, as an OC, if he does get the OC job. Does someone come and hire him immediately? And if someone does, that's just going to perplex the Eric Bieniemy situation even more. Because Sid Bieniemy has one good season, Matt Nagy has one good season again with all the stuff that Bieniemy had, and then he gets a job. That's really just going to prove my point even more, how perplexing this whole situation is. Because you can't use the excuses that, Andy Reid's calling the play. Well, Andy Reid's doing this. Well, Andy Reid's doing that. Those excuses don't work. If Nagy comes in, does what the enemy did, and then gets the job. So, I'm interested to see what happens there. Ultimately, I'm just kind of interested to see the way things shake out with the Chiefs normally, too, you know? Again, I expect Nagy to get promoted, but who's your quarterback's coach? I'm really interested to see if the Chiefs promote from within and do that, which would be what I would lean towards them doing, or if they maybe try to go outside of the box and bring somebody in. Look, I don't think that Cliff Kingsbury has any interest in coming back to the NFL right now, but he was there. It was Patrick Mahomes' college coach. We all know that, and we all know they're really close, and we all know that Cliff Kingsbury is unemployed. So would they give him a call? I don't know. I have no idea, but it'd be interesting to see what will happen there, but it's kind of the coaching carousel and the coaching chairs and things like that. But to finish up the enemy, just wish he would have gotten a head coaching job, Eddie. Just wish he would have gotten that opportunity. He's done 16, someone did the math, I believe, 16 interviews in his 5 seasons as the Chiefs head coach for head coaching jobs, and not one job offer. So, that's wild. 16 head coaching interviews, and you don't get one job offer. So, pretty crazy, man. Pretty crazy. And I get it. He may not be the best interviewer. I get it. When he was in college in Colorado, he got into trouble. But it still doesn't make any sense. Still doesn't make any sense to me. He's got the number one offense in the NFL for 5 years in a row. And then won 2 Super Bowls. I don't know what else. I literally don't know what else he can do. Kind of perplexing, but I would do wish him the best in Washington.
Well, we'll just leave it at that. We just leave it at that, yeah. So
Super Bowl champs, baby. Super Bowl champs, Daddy.
Oh, well, there you go. There you go. The Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition, episode 146, is in the books. Again, if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or it's your first time listening, make sure you subscribe to the podcast, and of course, make sure if you do review what Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star rating. Big shout out to a couple of listeners out there who mentioned somebody left out Alex real quick here before we close out, because we're pretty much out of time. But 1-star review. If you're gonna do that, then go listen to some other podcasts, so, because this is not it. This is not for you to do that. So,
star reviews are coming in.
There's only one. Only one.
One-star review. Well, that's when you know you've made it, Eddie. When you've got haters, you know you've made it.
Oh, man. But, yeah, anyways, we're up there. We're up there, Alex, though. Anyways, we're approaching overall 4 out of 5. So, now we're not doing too bad at all. I don't pay attention to that, but it was just brought up to my attention by 2 people that I know. So, but they give good reviews, though. They give good reviews about this podcast. So, we're definitely continuing to go in the right direction with this podcast.
You know, they probably put a 1-star review. They probably heard one of my rants and said, you know, this guy's an idiot, 1-star. Yeah. Moving on, I'm sorry, everybody. Sorry.
Sometimes
I just gotta get it off my chest.
Alright,
Eddie's got rants in him too. I hear the Eddie rants. I know Eddie's got him in him.
Yep, and I don't have one right now because we are out of time. Alex, Eddie, speaking of rants, we're gonna put those in the box till next week, but Alex, last box, we'll close it out.
Chiefs, Super Bowl champs. That's my last thought.
Fair enough. Alex, it's been great to have you back on the podcast there. You're on the seeing the light in the tunnel with that COVID stuff again. Once again, it's very good to have you back on the podcast. As normal, of course, stay tuned for more K-State coverage this weekend. Again, another K-State fulfilled weekend with basketball, men's and women's. Yeah, track and field, the Big 12 Indoor Championships begin tomorrow as we wrap up this podcast. When this podcast does roll out, it'll be in the day one with that. Tennis trying to find some solid footing this weekend as well. So a lot gone here in Manhattan, Kansas, athletic-wise, for K-State University, folks. The Wildcats, folks. All right, for Alex Aiden, Eddie Greer, a couple of K-State alums, folks, this has been another edition of the Purple Project Podcast, weekly edition, episode 146. If you have a question for me, find me on Twitter at Eddie_EG3. Alex, what's your Twitter handle?
Twitter handle is it's not underscore anything. What the heck? It is at AFACHTEN. That is at AFACHTEN. That is where you can find me.
All right. Go Cats, Alex. Do it again next week, sir.
Look forward to it, Eddie.
For listening to the Purple Project Podcast. Make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We'll talk to you all in the next episode of the Triple P Podcast. Go Cats!